We discuss the work of an immigration legal services program in Madison on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. As of yesterday, the United Nations refugee data portal indicates more than 5.7 million people have fled Ukraine, neighboring Poland taking in a huge influx. Let's focus on Wisconsin and what immigration attorneys are encountering in the midst of a refugee crisis, and then Title 42 that has blocked migrants at our southern border from seeking asylum. Biden administration signaling Title 42 could be lifted later this month. Join in on immigration, 800-642-1234. Carmel Capati manages immigration legal services for the Catholic Multicultural Center in Madison. Carmel, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me here. Very excited to be here.
Well, let's start with Ukraine, the latest humanitarian crisis. And Homeland Security Department has a program to resettle 100,000 Ukrainians here in the U.S., which really is a tiny number when you consider just the huge influx of refugees. What immigration issues will Ukrainians face here?
So, just to sort of provide a little bit of background, so the program that's being set up for Ukrainians is somewhat similar to the program that had been set up or is in place for Afghans as well. And it is surrounding their ability to come to the United States through a humanitarian parole process. It is a relatively new implementation for Ukrainians, but if we are trying to compare a little bit to what we've been experiencing with the Afghan population and the humanitarian process, it's been a very slow process, I will say, for the Afghans, and I'm not sure if it's going to be that same slowness with Ukrainians as well.
Take us into humanitarian parole, if you could, and how it differs from other paths to refugee settlement or paths to citizenship.
Yep, that's it's a good question because it is a little bit confusing. The parole process or system, it's first of all, it's authority that's granted by the Department of Homeland Security. That would allow a person to come into the United States on a temporary basis. Mm-hmm. And usually that's for a humanitarian reason or a significant public benefit. And I say temporary, that's an important point to note because that's different than refugees who are coming into the U.S. who might have a ability to have more permanent process in place, meaning able to apply for a lawful permanent resident card. Parolees may have that opportunity, but they also may not. So it's a little bit different than the refugee process. For parolees who are coming into the United States, and again, I'm going to use the Afghan population just because we've been dealing mm-hmm. a lot with them since August. That since the Taliban took over, they do have the ability to get their employment authorization documents, meaning work lawfully, get their social security numbers. If they're being resettled by a resettlement agency, then they have the ability to get some assistance with housing and clothing mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. just getting settled in general. Right now in Wisconsin, I believe we have resettled approximately 850 Afghans through the resettlement process, meaning they were paroled in. Overall, I believe that across the country, about 76,000 were evacuated to the mm-hmm. United States. I think your listeners probably recall when there was about 13,000 that were housed at Fort McCoy.
Yes, yes. Yep.
And other bases while they were waiting to get processed. And of that, as I mentioned, that 13,000, about 850 have made their homes in Wisconsin.
talking with Carmel Kapati, who is the lead immigration attorney for the Catholic Multicultural Center in Madison, as we discuss her work, immigration issues globally, and take your questions, 800-642-1234. Carmel, looking more closely at the situation with Afghan refugees and the resettlement here, you mentioned about 850 Afghans going through that process here in Wisconsin to resettle. What have you seen through the lens of these Afghans going through this piece of the immigration process? What barriers have they encountered? What things have gone smoothly?
Great question. I would say from an immigration standpoint, so I guess what I'd want to say is that there are the families who are evacuated who are here, but then they have so many family members who are still abroad, who we are also working with or trying to find pathways for them to rejoin their families who are here. So that is one of our biggest barriers, are still trying to reunite families who were separated. Afghan families are pretty large in general. So we have families who are working with whose children, some children are still in Afghanistan. We are working with minors whose parents are still in Afghanistan. Mm. Some of the other challenges that they face are because of the speed at which some of them were evacuated, they don't have a lot of documentation, mm-hmm. Which is required to apply for an immigration benefit within our system. Lots of documents, lots of evidence, lots of mostly identity documents. And one of the challenges that we're facing is sometimes the identity documents don't necessarily match with other identity documents, meaning a birth certificate. They're called the national ID of Afghan is, it's called tazkiras. Sometimes that date of birth doesn't quite match their passport. The year might be wrong, and the reason why is because unlike here in the U.S., we're very record oriented and are very strict with dates. In Afghanistan, in order to get a birth certificate, you go to the proper authority and someone will look at you and say, you look like you're about maybe 12 years old. Wow. And then they would put that year on the card. So you may be 12, but you also might be 11 or you might be 10. So it's that's, I think, one of the biggest challenges for us is making sure that we have the proper documents to submit with their applications. And the other point I wanted to add is they're experiencing trauma. So of course they had to, those who are here had to evacuate in a horrible circumstance. And a lot of them, as I mentioned, are young people, are children. As I mentioned, one of my clients is a minor who was separated from his family when the bomb exploded at the airport. So they have, besides trying to navigate a whole new society, a whole new culture, they also miss their family.
I would imagine if the child is separated from a parent or a parent is still in the home country, that must be also traumatizing and so scary because you just don't know day to day what might happen.
Exactly. It is scary. And what I would sort of also want to share with the listeners is that just sort of going back to the humanitarian parole process. So people who are here in the U.S. who are evacuated were paroled in. But as I mentioned, there's also a process that can be applied to their family members who might still be abroad. And that could be in Afghanistan, but it can also be in Pakistan, or we've got families in Turkey who we're also working with who escaped Afghanistan. But there's the humanitarian process to bring those folks over to, which is very stalled, I would say. And it is very frustrating for us as advocates as to why it is taking so long to adjudicate some of these petitions for those families who are still abroad.
We're discussing immigration issues in The View from Wisconsin with Carmel Carpati, who leads immigration legal services for the Madison-based Multicultural Catholic Center. You can join in at any point here, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment with Carmel Carpati here on the Ideas Network. We're hearing a viewpoint on our immigration system here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So as a backdrop, thousands of people took to the streets in Milwaukee earlier this week demanding that President Biden pass protections for immigrant workers. The statewide immigrant and worker rights group, Voces de la Frontera Action, they organized a two-day general strike for immigrant rights and a rally at the state capitol. Join in on immigration issues. Your questions, 800-642-1234. We have immigration attorney Carmel Carpati, who's with us for about nine more minutes. Carmel, let's change focus here to your center. The Catholic Multicultural Center helps people from as many as 60 countries. I'm wondering what type of immigration cases take up the bulk of your time. Where is your energy directed in immigration law?
So, yes, we serve a huge a variety of folks from different countries. I would say Catholic Multicultural Center is one of the only agencies that does provide so many different kinds of services in the family-based immigration arena, as well as the humanitarian-based arena. What takes up most of, I would say comprises most of our cases would be DACA renewals. Hmm. However, we also do a lot of citizenship applications, as well as family-based petitions where certain family members are trying to petition for a spouse or a parent or a child. U visas, which are visas available to individuals who are victims of qualifying crimes. We do have some asylum cases that we're also working on. So, gosh, really, we almost take anything that comes within the family-based or humanitarian-based arena, as long as the individuals don't make enough money. So because we are a nonprofit agency, we primarily serve no income or low income folks. And they also have to be within our 11 county service area, mm-hmm. which is primarily South Central Wisconsin. So we are super busy, but we're just so happy that to be here because there's a great need, a huge need for services.
Let's turn now to the U.S.-Mexico border. Talk Title 42, in particular, the public health order that gives border officials the power to block asylum seekers and migrants from reaching the U.S. at ports of entry, expel them to Mexico or their home countries rather than going through the processing of immigration laws. And the CDC said Title 42 could end later this month. What are your thoughts on the order and the potential for it to be lifted?
So I know it is a controversial policy that was in place, and just so folks understand, when we're talking about Title 42 of the U.S. Code, Section 265, and it had been used to stop the entry of people in the U.S. based upon the COVID pandemic or for public health concerns, and what it allowed is the prohibition of primarily single adults and families to be turned away at the border if they presented a danger regarding a communicable disease. It was started in March 20 of 2020, and you're right, hundreds of thousands were denied entry into the U.S. My understanding is that it will be lifted maybe around May 23rd was what I saw the latest news. What we're going to see, what I suspect, is even more levels of migration coming in to the border, but also making their way to Wisconsin. And I don't have a particular opinion on it other than we want to be prepared to be able to serve the families, the eligible families who come to us with legal claims, and we want to be able to serve them competently and adequately. So if it gets lifted, we will be ready for the work that will come based upon that lifting of the order.
I wonder if it's been a tool to control migration rather than purely a tool for public health to fight COVID.
Mm-hmm. That's, I think, a very common assessment, and I believe there is some truth to that. I think what I think is difficult and challenging as an immigration advocate, as an immigration lawyer, is the fact that the way that immigration laws change so quickly. Mm. And for us advocates, we are just trying to keep up to date with the changes, the rapid changes in policies based upon political whims and who's making the decision depending upon, you know, which side you're on. What we're focused on is our people, our immigrants, our clients who deserve these services. And we want to make sure that we're providing competent services and are up to date on what the new laws are. So yeah, sometimes it gets overwhelming if we think about too much sort of the rationale behind the changes, because we're just so focused on getting the work done and working with our vulnerable populations, because that's what we care about.
What have you seen by way of a backlog? At the end of last year, the number of incomplete immigration cases in our U.S. courts was almost at 1.6 million. Is that affecting your clients?
It is affecting our clients. And one of the big things that this backlog has been causing is just simply a backlog in employment authorization documents, or their work permits, as they're known. So again, that is so important for a lot of our clients, just the ability to work here lawfully while they're waiting for their case to be adjudicated, while they might be waiting for their immigration court hearing trial to be held. What they really just want to do is to be able to work here lawfully. And that's, I think, one of the most tangible, negative things of this backlog is their ability to be able to work. There's so many downsides to the backlog. But again, if you're, if you have an asylum case and your trial isn't set for, you know, another 2 years or 3 years,
what are you going to do in the meantime?
Exactly. But also from a legal standpoint, you've got to work with facts that of things that occurred 5 years ago, and you have to bring them to life in your trial, your asylum trial, you know, like 5 years later. And sometimes that's difficult to keep preparing and mm-hmm. re-preparing. And if a hearing gets set over again, you have to prepare all over again.
Many redos.
Oh my goodness. This is why it's just such a headache working through our immigration system, which is so complicated.
I want to land here on language. We only have less than a minute left, but you previously supervised translators for the Wisconsin court system. And mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, how does that experience inform how you communicate in your center and what you see in the area of communicating in native languages?
Thank you for asking that great question. Yes, we use interpreters for individuals whenever they request it. And we think it's very important to do because, as you know, as your listeners know, people communicate better in their first language. And we want to make sure that they're comfortable sharing as many details as they can in a way that they are able to do so. So yes, we use often community interpreters. We use interpreters through agencies. Sometimes a family member might be able to communicate or be able to interpret okay. So mm-hmm. sometimes we'll do that too. Mostly we don't have a big budget for our interpreter services, but we use interpreters very regularly.
Carmel, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Carmel Kapati manages immigration legal services for the Catholic Multicultural Center in Madison. Ahead this hour, we get reaction to the leaked draft opinion that appears to show the Supreme Court poised to overturn Roe. Join in with your reaction, your questions for a former state Supreme Court justice. 800-642-1234. News update is next here on the Ideas Network.